very early always, and are quite ready to start with the meeting, having already availed yourself of water, tea, or coffee. All right, Denver. Yes. Then the other matter is with the minutes that we're getting these days. Now, first thing we're going to look at, and I'm saying this before we adopt the agenda, before we start with minutes, will you please check always that you've signed or that you are effectively recorded on page one, first thing, and we can always address that quickly. On that note then, I'm going to ask for an addition to be placed on the agenda, a very small addition, and that is before adjournment, correspondence and invitations. All right? And then adjournment. Everyone happy? Thank you. On that note, please, can we have someone to propose the adoption of the agenda? Thank you, Honourable Macpherson, seconded by the Honourable Williams. Apologies, Mr. Hermans.
Chairperson, I have not received any apology from anyone at this time yet.
Just noting and looking around. Everyone is...
Mr. Chairperson, I will leave for Science and Technology at 10 o'clock.
Thank you very much. Will you be returning or is it flexible?
Unfortunately, at 12 o'clock, the public protector committee starts to meet.
That's fine. Thank you. That is Honourable Kuanoff, Honourable Mantash.
And myself, too, sir, but now we have to leave at 20 past 9. I have a half nine meeting with the chief for leaving.
Will you be returning?
If time permits, if you will still be here, I will.
Yes. Because it would seem as if we won't have a quorum, I'm going to do the minutes now then. Is that, you know, that's unfortunately doing a slight change to the agenda. Is that all right? Fine. All right. Can we just go through minutes here? Have you had a chance to read them? Yes, you remember these are the ones that were returned. They were adopted with amendments subject to review. If you look at point four, those of you who raised the issues, the resolutions, is Honourable Mkongi here? Just check them, please. All acceptable. So all we're doing is to say that we do accept these. Now that they have been amended, we propose adoption subject to the amendments being done. Yes, Honourable Macpherson.
Thanks, Chairperson. I mean, I think they will all agree that the resolutions pertaining to the NRCS on page 3 are important, and do we have any feedback in that respect? I mean, just noting that it is from May.
We did have them on another matter, as you know. As far as I'm concerned, they're back again sometime. When is that date? I'm advised that while they are back for the quarterly reports, that specifically is not there. But what we may do if the agenda program gets too tight is to include that on the agenda. Is that all right, Honourable Macpherson?
Chair, I don't have a problem with that because I'm more than willing and happy to engage with them in a forum like this. I do just want to say that it has been 3 months since those were originally posed to them, and I think in the least in writing they should have sent it to us.
Fine, we will distribute what we have received. Is that, are we all on board with that? Thank you. Okay, so those minutes are dealt with. I'm reminded by the secretary that the ECOs will require adoption here. Okay. So, that being the case, I'm going to indicate to the Honourable Kurinoff and the Honourable Montage, when the adoption comes up, we'll get some issues. Is that all right? Fine, thank you. Honourable Williams?
Sorry, Chair, have we moved to the minutes of Tuesday the 16th? Okay.
Any minute, Honourable Montage may leave, and fine. Now, let's look at the minutes that we have not seen, not adopted. They are the 16th of August. Everyone got them? Right. You now know what to do. Check the last page. Page 1 plus the last page, Honourable Williams.
Chairperson on page 1, under the African National Congress, they put there Mr. S. Williams. Thank you. I must change that, please. Thank you.
Page 2. You'll see the committee business, which is all fresh in our minds. Please note, the footnote has been moved, and I had requested to the bottom of that page, reconciling and noting the new rule with the previous rule. That's all that is doing. Right. Consideration, page 3. And, of course, that last page. Can we please have someone to propose adoption? Thanks, Honourable Williams. Seconded by the Honourable Montage. We barely got off to a fast move here. And then we're going to be having the presentation here by the Chief Director of Trade Negotiations from DTI, Ms. Nikki Kruber, okay, as well as she has a colleague with her there, and the colleague in attendance from ITED, is that right, is Ms. Ashlele. Is that right? Thank you. Now, if you just go ahead, Ms. Kruber.
Thank you very much, Chair. If I can start with the presentation, in terms of the contents, I'll just briefly go over the approach to negotiations that we normally follow, the background to South Africa-European Union trade relations, the background to the Economic Partnership Agreement negotiations, the implications of the Economic Partnership Agreement, and then improvement on the Trade Development Cooperation Agreement in terms of market access and the textual provisions. Then as well, the South Africa EU Geographical Indications Protocol that we also completed as part of the EPA negotiations, milestones, way forward, and then the conclusion. In terms of the approach to trade negotiations, our approach is informed by and is aimed to support the national development objectives set out in the National Development Plan, the new growth path, and the Industrial Policy Action Plan. The aim is to provide opportunities for especially increased exports of value-added products, and also that the outcome of the negotiation should not unduly limit the development policy space that's available for South Africa. We go through a very thorough national consultation process at the intergovernmental level with the South African Revenue Services, the Department of Agriculture, and then all other departments that have an interest, and also through a consultation process with business and labor and NEDLAC. Of course, because we are part of the Southern African Customs Union, we also have to consult in SACL with our BLMS partners, Botswana, Lesotho, Swaziland, and Namibia, to protect our common exchange tariff. And then the outcome of the negotiation should support regional integration. And it's our view that all of this was achieved in terms of the outcome of the Economic Partnership Agreement. In terms of our background on the South African European Union relations. The relations between South Africa and the European Union has been governed by the trade chapter of the Trade Development and Cooperation Agreement called the TDCA. The TDCA was signed on the 11th October 1999 and it provisionally entered into force on the 1st of January 2000. It was implemented over a 12-year period. That was the phase down that was agreed for our tariffs. The TDCA was the first comprehensive trade agreement that was completed between South Africa and a developed country. As you know, the EU currently consists of 28 countries. In terms of the tariff schedule that was agreed under the TDCA, South Africa committed to grant duty-free access of 86% of EU imports over a 12-year period, and we fully implemented our commitments in 2012. While the European Union liberalized 95% of South Africa's imports over a 10-year period, and that fully implemented the agreement in 2010. The agreement did provide some protection for sensitive South African sectors like clothing and textiles, tyres, agriculture, where either no preferences were given in certain products or either there was only a margin of preference that was agreed. But there were some issues in terms of the TDCA as it reduced South Africa's policy space in a number of areas. And there was also an uneven market access in agriculture where South Africa liberalized more tariff lines than the European Union in agriculture. In terms of our track figures between South Africa and the EU, the EU as a bloc remains South Africa's main trading partner. The total trade increased from 374 billion rand in 2011 to 566 billion in 2015. This is an increase of 43%. South Africa's exports and imports of the EU both had an annual growth rate of about 9% during this period. And our exports during this period to the European Union increased from 151 billion rand to 216 billion rand. From this you will see that there is still an imbalance in our trade between South Africa and the European Union. The total black trade has grown by 257% since the agreement was implemented in 2000. Our exports to the European Union is still highly concentrated on primary products. And if we look in 2015 at the trade figures and our top exports to the European Union, you will see that platinum, ferroalloys, and coal and iron ore is still among our top 10 exports to the EU. And it contributed a share of 13.2%, 4.8%, 3.7%, and 3.1% respectively in 2015. But there is some positive aside to this as well, and we have had some increases in our manufactured goods to the EU, and actually in 2015 our top exports to the European Union, as our union was motor cars and motor vehicles for transport, that together contributed 21% of our exports to the European Union. So this is a very positive move and a move that we want to keep going in future, and that we hope that EPA will also contribute to. We've also, among our top exports to the European Union, also agricultural products like dates, citrus and wine. And as you will see, that one of the outcomes of the EPA agreement is an increase in our market access in agricultural products. In terms of the background on the economic partnership agreement negotiations, these negotiations between the European Union and various groupings of the African, Caribbean and Pacific countries called the ACP countries started on the 27th of November 2002. The APAs were negotiated to replace the unilateral trade regime that was in existence between the European Union and the ACP countries under the Cotonou Agreement. South Africa joined before the Cotonou Agreement, this unilateral trade access was given under the various alterations of the Lomé Convention. South Africa joined the fourth version of the Lomé Convention in 1997, and we are also a partner of the Cotonou Partnership Agreement, but we were never part of the unilateral trade regime that was given under the Lomé Convention and then under the Cotonou Agreement to the ACP countries, and therefore, as I mentioned, we had to negotiate reciprocal agreement called the TDA in the late 90s that entered into force in 2000. This unilateral market access that was provided by the European Union to the ACP countries were not in conformity to the provisions of the WTO agreement, and the WTO gave the EU a waiver until 2007 to replace this arrangement, and the EU argued that the economic partnership agreement would be the best way to replace this unilateral access that they were providing to the ACP countries. And these negotiations then started. Angola, Botswana, Lesotho, Mozambique, Namibia, South Africa later, and Swaziland negotiated the EBAS under the EU SADC EBA configuration. This does not compose all of the SADC countries, some of them are in other configurations. And initially Tanzania was also part of these, this configuration, but they later decided to rather join the Eastern African Community negotiations of the EPA. South Africa joined SADC Group as an observer country. As I said, we already had our own trade agreement with the European Union on the onset of the negotiations. And in 2005, a review of the TDCA became due, and it was decided to rather negotiate agreement under the EPA. We started with consultations with the European Union and with the other SADC EPA countries, and in the beginning of 2007, the EU finally agreed that we can formally join the negotiations of the EPA, and that's where our formal negotiation process started. South Africa's core interest in the negotiation has been to harmonize the trade regime between SAPO and the European Union, because there were differences in our trade regimes in our customs union with the European Union, but also to secure further market access in agriculture beyond that that was provided in the TDCA, and also to claw back some of the policies that were lost under the TDCA, as I mentioned. In terms of the implications of the Economic Partnership Agreement that has been finalized now, the EPA would ensure that the SABO common external tariffs are maintained through the uniform trade regime agreed between SABO and the EU under the EPA. The SABO made a common tariff offer to the European Union, so our common external tariff will be kept in place. The European Union did not make a common offer to the SABO countries. Botswana, Lesotho, Swaziland and Namibia will receive duty-free quota-free access on all products except arms under the EPA. South Africa has to negotiate line by line for market access into the European Union. The negotiations also granted South Africa an opportunity, as I said, to address some of the shortfalls under the TDCA in terms of the threshold provisions and our access in terms of agriculture, where we liberalize more. One of the issues, problems under the TDCA was the standstill clause restrictions, where South Africa were not able to increase any tariff tariff duties against the European Union on goods that were excluded from liberalization, and we were also not able to increase the duties where there is only a margin of preference given in terms of the NFN rate. So if we gave a margin of, we agreed to give a margin of preference of 50% under the TDCA, and the NFN duty was 20% and the duty will then increase to 40%. We have to keep the 10% duty in place vis-à-vis the EU. We were not able to increase it to 20%. That will then constitute 50% of the MRN rate because of how the standstill clause was formulated under the TDCA. And also, where we did not give any tariff preferences, if those the duties on those products were increased, we were not able to increase the duty also vis-à-vis the EU. There was also a safeguard provision in place under the TDCA where if there's been an increase of exports to South Africa of a product because there is a liberalization, so the duty is being reduced vis-à-vis the EU, We were able to take safeguard action and put in place a safeguard duty vis-a-vis the EU, but that provision was only in place for 12 years and it fell away in 2012. So now if there's an increase of products from the EU, we must able to take a safeguard action under the TDCAs, except for some agricultural products. And then also the TDCA does not allow us to put any export taxes in place vis-a-vis export to the European Union. In terms of the market, the improvement on the TDCA in the EPA in terms of market access, as I said, our main aim was to increase our agricultural market access to the European Union. Under the TDCA, there was no liberalization of fishery products. Under the EPA, all fishery tariff lines will be liberalized, some as entering into force of the agreement, some over a period of 5 years, and some over a period of 9 years. So after 9 years, there would be a complete liberalization of the fishery tariff lines for our exports to the European Union. In terms of new market access in agriculture, the new market access for 32 agricultural products, some of this new market access is, for example, for sugar, where we had no market access under the TDCA for sugar. We now have a duty-free tariff rate, like quota into the EU, for 150,000 tons of sugar a year. And also, we had no market access for ethanol, and we will now have 80,000 tons duty-free that we are able to export to the European Union in a year. Both of these have very high duties in the European Union, and we didn't export any sugar and very little ethanol because of the duties that was in place in the European Union. We also have an improvement in terms of the duty preferences that's given for flours, some dairy products, some fruit products, canned fruit, some jams, and fruit juices. And as well, very important, under the GCA, we have a duty-free quota to export wine to the EU for about 50 million litres at the moment. This will be increased to 110 million litres a year, and this quota will then increase yearly with about a million litres as well. So these are the main agricultural market access gains that we have under the Economic Partnership Agreement. Then in terms of improvement on the textual provisions from the TDCA to the EPA, as I have mentioned, one of the issues were export taxes. We were not allowed to introduce any export taxes on export to the European Union. Now under the EPA, we will be allowed to introduce export taxes on 8 products at a time, defined at the 8-6 tariff level. Duty will not be able to be in place for more than 12 years, and it also cannot be more than 10%, but it is an improvement over what is in place under the EPA, under the TDCA, sorry. One of the really important issues under the improvements under the EPA is in terms of the rules of origin, where we will now be allowed, that now allows for extended accumulation, that can facilitate intra-regional trade and industrialization across especially the southern and eastern African region. What this means in essence is that we can import the intermediate products, say, from Kenya, and we can use that intermediate product in a product that we are manufacturing here for export to the European Union. So this should facilitate and also assist with trade and development of regional value chains in Africa that we are looking at. In terms of the issue under the standstill clause, in terms of the new standstill clause under the Economic Partnership Agreement, we would be able to increase tariffs on those products that are excluded from liberalization vis-a-vis the EU. And we will also be able to increase tariffs on products where we are only giving a margin of preference vis-a-vis the EU, as long as we keep that margin of preference in place, so it gives us a bit more policy space. There's also a bilateral safeguard provision that was negotiated under the EPA, and this safeguard provision will stay in place for the duration of the agreement. So in future, if there's a surge of imports on a product where we have liberalized and this causing injury to the domestic industry, we would be able to take safeguard action and impose a safeguard duty if necessary. We also negotiated the automatic specific agricultural safeguard on a list of products where in a year, if the volume of imports on these products reach a certain level, an automatic duty, safeguard duty, will become applicable for the rest of the year. Another is in terms of the rules of origin is that we agreed on single stage transformation for clothing. Under the PDCA level stage, it means that the textiles have to be manufactured in South Africa for clothing products that we manufacture to export that duty free to the European Union. Now, if necessary, we would be allowed to import inputs for clothing products that we manufacture to export to the European Union. We hope this will also assist in increasing our exports of clothing to the European Union. In terms of the geographical indications protocol,
before you get there, just clarify that point. Are you, if one's talking textiles, are you saying you'll be able to import the actual material used? Exactly what do you mean?
You would be able to import the material that you use to manufacture, for example, a clothing product, or to manufacture also textiles in South Africa. And that will then, you will be able to then export that to the European Union under the preferences agreed. So just maybe before I go to the geographical indications, the IPA also cover the so-called new generation issues. The intellectual property rights, public procurement, competition, and investment. And in terms of these areas, what we agreed under the GCA is to cooperate with the European Union, and then there is a provision that for any country that is part of the EPA that wants to negotiate an agreement on any of these issues with the European Union, they will be able to do so in the future. And then in terms of services, the European Union wanted to negotiate services agreements also under the EPA. South Africa, Namibia and Angola was not willing to negotiate services, so we are part of those negotiations. But the European Union is still busy with negotiations under the EPA as part of a built-in agenda in negotiating services agreements between the European Union, Botswana, Lesotho, Swaziland and Mozambique. Those negotiations is still ongoing. And there's also a provision that if any of the other countries in future wants to negotiate services agreements with the European Union, you would be able to do that. In terms of the geographical indications protocol that was negotiated between South Africa and the European Union under their economic partnership agreement, this protocol make provision for protection of South Africa as European Union geographical indications. It also makes provision for how we will trade in terms of wine spirits between South Africa and the European Union. The protocol addresses the issues of protection of South Africa wine names exported to the European Union, and of course wines being exported by the European Union to South Africa, as well as the protection of some agricultural products such as rooibos tea, Peru lamb and honeybush tea for South Africa, and a number of other agricultural products for the European Union. Importantly, the protocol provides coexistence of names, and therefore it ensures that the current users in South Africa of the names that will be protected under this protocol will be able to keep on using these names in future. For example, feta. Fees is one of the names that's supposed to be protected under the protocol for the European Union, but the current users in South Africa of FETA, the name FETA, would be able to continue doing so, but new users will have to do it under different rules. In terms of the agreement that was reached on GIs between the EU and South Africa for the European Union, they will receive protection for 251 GIs. which covers 120 wine names, 5 beers, 20 spirits, and 106 agricultural products that includes, as I said, some tea names, olives, special meats, and so on. And South Africa has received protection for 105 GIs, which includes 102 wine names, and then, as I said, 3 agricultural products, being rooibos tea, honey bush tea, and Peru lamb. And there's also provision that South Africa can add an additional 30 agricultural products in future. So as we develop these GIs in South Africa, we would be able to add it to this list of GIs that will be protected also by the European Union. In terms of the milestones in the EPA negotiations, the economic partnership agreement was initial. The final outcome of the negotiation was initial on 15 July 2014. We then started a joint legal scrubbing exercise with the European Union that was concluded on the 23rd of October 2015. The EPA went through some internal processes about the European Union and in the SADC EPA countries to get it ready for signature. It was signed on the 10th of June 2016, and then now implementation will take place, obviously, after ratification. For implementation, there would be certain institutions that will be established under the EPA agreement, a joint EU-SADC EPA Council, as well as a trade and development committee that will also assist with the implementation of the agreement. And we will also go through a public awareness seminars, also with the European Union, that will be carried out also for civil society, business and labour and all interested parties in South Africa to make them aware of this agreement and how they can make use of the advantages that we've negotiated under this agreement for those parties. In terms of the way forward, the European Union are able to provisionally apply this agreement while it's being ratified by all of the European Union countries and subject to approval. And this will be considered, this agreement will be considered by the European Parliament, as I understand, early in September. And if it's agreed there, they would be in a position to provisionally apply the agreement, while the SADC EPA countries would have to ratify the agreement for it to provisionally enter into force then with the European Union. The aim is for this agreement to provisionally enter into force before the expiry of the EC duty-free quota-free market access regulation on 1 October 2016 to guarantee the continued preferential market access into the European Union for Botswana, Namibia and Swaziland. They would lose their preferential market access if this agreement is not ratified before then. Then in terms of the conclusion, as I said, the EPA negotiations created the opportunity for the SACO member states to comply with the obligations and the SACO agreement, which calls for member states to review and negotiate new trade agreements together. We've done this now. The signed agreement provides an opportunity to consolidate SACO's external or SACO's trade relations with the European Union and therefore preserves SACO's common external tariffs. It provides enhanced policy space vis-à-vis the European Union from that was negotiated under the TDCA, and it also provides improved market access for South Africa on agricultural products. Thank you, Jane.
And that's why I carefully selected. I was looking at the diagram that you've got there, milestones. You just turn back. Mine's actually, it's page 15, is it? 15. You spoke about 2016 was signed, huh? And then implementation after ratification. I understand there are further processes, and I'd like you to clarify that for us. So, it's been ratified, and the next stage is depositing. So,
Now, where are we? If you could just look at the ratification as we see it there, we're still adopting it here. What are we looking at from here? And how many countries are in the loop? And are they largely out of Africa, within Africa? Just clarify that.
You mean in terms of the ECOWAS with other groupings? So we were the first country, the first grouping in Africa to sign a comprehensive economic partnership agreement. There is, because the unilateral market access that was provided by the European Union was going to lapse in 2007, or the waiver under the WTO was going to lapse, they had to negotiate interim economic partnerships agreements that were signed by many countries in the ACP at the end of 2007. And the idea was then to negotiate full economic partnerships agreements that they would replace these interim EPA agreements over a period of time. South Africa did not initial the interim EPA. Some of the other countries in our grouping did initial it and also sign it, but it was not ratified by any of the countries in the other EPA groupings. Some of the other countries in Africa signed the interim EPA that they negotiated. They ratified those agreements and it has entered into force. Like, for example, Mauritius, IEPA, if you can call it that, has entered into force between them and the European Union. And also the ACARI Forum group that also implemented, ratified and implemented the interim EPA agreement that was negotiated between them and the European Union. A number of the other countries in Africa is still finalizing the full EPA agreement. And as they finalize it, they will sign it and implement it. So for South Africa or the South EPA group, all of the countries except Angola have signed the full economic partnership agreement on 10th of June 2016. So South Africa, Botswana, Lesotho, Swaziland, Namibia and Mozambique is now going through the internal ratification processes. After ratification has taken place in Parliament or however it's agreed in their country to do it, we have to submit our instrument of ratification to the European Union, that is the depository, and then the European Union, once their Parliament has considered the economic partnership agreement, they will approve that they will submit their instrument for provisional application to the depository. That will then mean with the last depository, the agreement will 3 days after the last depository, the agreement will then provisionally enter into force. And entry into force will then happen once the last ratification is done by the European countries.
Does your colleague wish to add anything?
No, she has never ever seen things.
Ms. Pashele. Right. Okay, on that note then, it's over to the committee. I see the Honourable Fernolf, Honourable Williams, Honourable MacPherson. Anyone else down there? Honourable Easterhazen. And finally, Honourable Mkongi.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation. My concern is Brexit. South Africa is the largest trading partner in Africa with the United Kingdom. And when will this agreement become null and void? And what plans do we have to make sure that we enter into a similar agreement with the United Kingdom? Because it's an important trading partner.
Thank you. Honourable Williams.
Thanks, Chair. I also welcome the presentation. This sounds much better than the EECA, especially the increase almost double of the wine exports, and that's quite a significant increase there. And I also hope that this also benefits the farm workers that work on the wine farms, so that they also can benefit from this agreement. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Honourable Maximus?
Thanks, Chair. My question is similar, slightly different to the Honourable Grunald. With regards to the effects of Brexit and single market access, clearly we are going to be affected. I was concerned by the Minister's statements in June when he said that, you know, it's not really a problem for now. But, you know, we know, I mean, if one reads the news, that the UK are looking at a two-year exit, and also the European Union are pushing them as hard as possible to leave as quickly as possible. So unless there's a time frame that we've developed to start a negotiating process with Britain, I think that needs to be provided to us, Chair, so we can start following that process. Because, I mean, Ms. Kruger, you will be well aware the negotiations, you know, on trade agreements don't take place overnight. In fact, they probably will take 2 years or longer. So if you can just walk us through that process. And then I'd also just like to understand why we don't want to be a part of services agreement, and what the rationale behind that decision is. Thank you. Sorry, Chair. And then I would just like, if you can indulge me, and Ms. Kruger, maybe you're not the right person to put the question to, but do you have any understanding where we are on the Zimbabwe blockade? What is being done to ensure that doesn't happen again and that doesn't affect our SADC trade agreements?
All right. You did very quickly link it to SADC, because I was going to say, I'm not sure just why we're linking that to EPAS suddenly. All right. Point taken. Honourable Esterhazen.
Thank you, Chair. Just further on Brexit of the UK, Britain receives 20% of all South African goods, and this might affect trade relations now, if there's anything negative now. South Africa now has the New Protection and Investment Act that will protect foreign investment rather than the bits that we had before. How would this also Brexit influence financial investment of British banks, etc., into South Africa? Also the concern and wider access for agriculture and processed goods. There's a lot of give and take, in short. In addition, the EU wanted in the negotiations geographic indicator status for most of our wines and cheeses, etc., like rooibos and things like that, which South Africa has been tremendous assist for Karoo and lamb, I think was one also that were mentioned in the thing. This in short means that any products produced in this relevant geographical area can be marketed as such, which is also a concern.
Thank you.
No, thank you very much. I might be asking a number of questions. I think the presenters are aware that in these negotiations there's an element of new generation issues, which include services, which includes government procurement, competition and so forth. Are we considering those negotiations going forward? Especially what we were discussing in our colloquium, public procurement, and how the World Trade Organization laws say about the private sector, making sure that they also assist us in that. That is the first one. What kind of approach now are we going to take? Because most of these documents they are in the ambit of the European Union. And as other members have raised the question of Brexit, the implications. Because when I was reading when that vote was taking place, I said when I was arguing my vote, that necessarily means officials of the Republic of South Africa must be drafting now new agreements and new engagements with the European Union and with Great Britain. And what are the implications in terms of that? Is there anything that we discussed with Britain to come and invest? Because I was reading there was a move that some of the British companies will be trading straight or directly with South Africa. And this agreement, particularly with the TDCA, not losing our policy space, I'm asking this question because I've been repeating it, that some of the World Trade Organization agreements that were reached did close down our policy briefing and our policy space. What are the implications of this particular one, especially in TDCA going forward in terms of that space? Lastly, Jefferson, the two agricultural products which are to receive market access into the European Union, are these products that South Africa is competitive in terms of export capacity? Two, does the country have such a capacity to take this advantage? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Just a couple myself. You referred, Ms. Kruger, on page 10 or slide 10, improvement on TDCA market access. You indicated that the EFIS provided South Africa with the opportunity to improve market access greater than TDCA on fisheries as well as 32 agricultural products, and then you actually listed some of these. Now, in that regard, if you look at Article 113, 24.2 and 25.1, where it refers to what is entry into force. And it indicates here that provisional application of this agreement between the EU and the member of SAHU shall exclude the agricultural market access concessions, let's get that spelt out, and the fisheries market concessions referred to in Article 24(2) and Article 25(1) that are donated by National State Fair in the tariff schedules 1 and 2. Now, you know, at first when you said this, I thought, well, now we've got just about an open-door policy. And now I see that there's actually a chain on the door. So could you just spell that out?
Thank you. Maybe if I can start with a question by the Honourable Cornwell and repeat it by almost everyone else in terms of the implications of Brexit. We've already had a number of engagements with the United Kingdom High Commission in South Africa. We also had on the sidelines of the G20 ministers meeting, Minister did have a discussion with the Trade Minister of the United Kingdom as well on how they see Brexit and the implications of that and what it will mean for South Africa. So we are engaging with the UK. But the United Kingdom has not yet taken the decision. They have not yet submitted the Article 50 notification to the European Union. It's not sure when it will happen. My feeling is probably only next year as they get everything in place to negotiate the exit with the European Union. While these negotiations take place, all of the obligations in terms of their membership to the European Union will stay in place. So the agreement, the EPA agreement, will also provisionally enter into force for the United Kingdom, and it will stay in place until they have formally negotiated their exit from the European Union, that can take 2 years or longer if that is agreed with the partners in the EU. We do not know yet, and the UK also do not know yet what would be the terms of their exit out of the European Union and how that will influence their trade agreements. So we will have to see how that develops. We are keeping very close contact, as I said, with our colleagues in the United Kingdom. We've already indicated that we would want to put something in place if they're going to exit also the agreements that the European Union has between them and other trading partners. We want to put in place as soon as possible and an arrangement there between SACU, because we will have to negotiate the SACU, and the European and the United Kingdom, and we are having those discussions. But it's very difficult to now talk about the time frame, because the UK can also not formally start negotiations now while they have not formally given their notification to the UK. My understanding is that once they have even formally given their notification to the United Kingdom, to the European Union, they would be able, and they are going to start having discussions then and maybe formal negotiations with other trading partners, and we will keep a close follow with them in terms of when that can happen and what can be the terms of the engagement with them. We know they are very important trading partners for South Africa, also other members in SACU. They are our second biggest trading partner in the European Union after Germany, and they are actually, I think in terms of our agricultural products, the biggest trading partner in the European Union. So it is an important partnership, and we are dealing with this seriously. In terms of whether we can have investments or how this will impact, especially financial investments or from their banks into South Africa, I know that National Treasury is also having discussions, and they are also dealing with this, following up on these issues. So I can just assure you that we are looking at all of these issues. As soon as we have a better idea of what is going to be the process that the UK will follow and how that will impact on us, we will, of course, give further information to this committee. Then in terms of, I think I agree with Honourable Williams in terms of the importance of the wine quota. We are already exporting much more than the 50 million litres duty-free access that we have. But, I mean, this will give us a further advantage, and the hope is that this will, of course, also then filter down to the farm workers. In terms of the questions from the Honourable McPherson, I think I hope I've answered the issue that on Brexit. In terms of the why we do not want to negotiate at this stage a services agreement, we do not have any services agreements in place at the moment. We have started negotiations in sight. The negotiations is on the priority sectors. The six priority sectors that has been identified is almost finished. We will also be negotiating services now in the second phase of the tripartite negotiations between SADC, COMESA and the EAC, and we will be negotiating as part of the first phase of negotiations. We will be negotiating services in the continental free trade agreement negotiations that have started. So the idea is that we're first going to negotiate services agreements on the continent, get that framework in place, and then we will start looking at negotiating whether we want to negotiate with other partners and when be the right time to do that. Then, in terms of the Zimbabwe debate, unfortunately, I'm not part of those discussions, so I can't tell you how far it is. I know that there is discussions taking place. The SADC summit is taking place this week, and this is also something that will be discussed on the sidelines of that, but I'm not able to give you any further information. In terms of, I think that the question from the Honourable Esther Hayton, I think in terms of Brexit, I've answered that. In terms of the geographical indications that you are doing, what this agreement will mean is that only, for example, Karoo Lam, only those the blue land that is produced in that specific geographical area that has been indicated in the conditions of the GR would be able to market the product as a Kuru lamb a product. The same for rooibos and honeyboos and the different wines. And the same would be for the European Union in terms of the geographical indications that they indicated. For example, the specific wine with can't think of a specific name, but it will, the specific names is directly linked to a geographical area, and only the producers in that geographical area would be able to use those names in terms of other wines or then the agricultural product that has been agreed under this. And this will also then be not only for our exports to the European Union, but also if say the US, say a company in the United States, want to export rooibos tea to the European Union, they will not be able to export it as a rooibos tea because the European Union will be protecting rooibos tea in the EU, and only if you are exporting from that specific geographical area or if the owners of that DI in South Africa agrees that someone, say in the US, can export the product, they would allow that. So that is, that's the protection that would be allowed. And also no other company then in the EU would be able to register a trademark, for example, with this name, rebels or tea or any of the other geographical indications, and the same, of course, in South Africa for the European Union DIs. In terms of the questions from the Honourable Economy, in terms of the new generation issues, as I said, the only thing that we've agreed in the Economic Partnership Agreement is that we will cooperate with the European Union in terms of issues surrounding economic intellectual property rights, issues on competition, issues on public procurement. We did not agree to negotiate any of these issues, and we are not at this stage considering negotiating any of those issues. In future, if we do that, then make that consideration and decide to negotiate, and then we will enter into discussions with the European Union. All of these issues, as you said, is also issues that is now very prominent in the WTO, and it's coming up in other trade negotiations between other countries, especially in the big, negotiations, the mega trading negotiations that is taking place. These issues are being negotiated, but at this stage, we are still developing our own policy frameworks, and we do not want to negotiate this now. Maybe just as an aside, Chair, I can say that for intellectual property, we have developed a framework for consultations to for our, the development of our intellectual property policy, and in future maybe we can also come to this committee when you have an opportunity and bring that framework that we're going to use to develop our intellectual property policy for South Africa. Then in terms of, well, I think my, I hope that has answered your questions also in terms of the WTO and how the disagreement will to have an impact in terms of what is happening under the WTO. So that we just cooperating as they say, so it should not have any influence in terms of, or it should not influence our position that we are taking in terms of these issues as it comes up in the World Trade Organization negotiations. In terms of the issue in terms of whether it's the new market access, whether we have capacity, before when we started the negotiations, we had really intense consultations with the industries. And we wanted to be sure that in terms of what we are questioning, in terms of additional market access with the European Union, it is market access that we can actually use. So we do have the productive capacity in South Africa to make use of this new market access into the European Union. We are a big exporter of certain fishery products into the European Union, so there's definitely a huge advantage for us in terms of that. In terms of wines, we've already said We actually export at the moment about 350 million litres to the European Union. So you can see that 110 million litres duty free is not, it's covering only a quarter of, or a third of what we are exporting to the European Union. So we would definitely be able to make use of that. And also the other market access that we have negotiated is in areas where there was a specific interest that has been expressed by the domestic industry. And we also wanted to focus on more value-added products so that we can also increase in terms of our exports to the European Union the value-added products instead of just keep exporting the primary products to the European Union. And in terms of the question asked by the chair, the entering into force is a very, very complex, but I'll try and explain it as succinct as possible. In terms of the provisional entering into force, because there was an issue that some of the member states of SACU, Botswana, Namibia, and Swaziland might lose the duty-free market access into the European Union if they do not ratify the agreement, and there is not an agreement in place, the EPA between them and the EU before the end of September 2016. It was agreed that the agreement can enter into force between individual SACU member states and the EU. Normally in our trade agreements, what we are saying is that the agreement will only enter into force, the trade agreement, once all of the SACU countries ratify the agreement because of our common external tariff. But because we have the TDCA, so we already have market access that we are giving to the European Union, and the BRMS by default is giving the same duty-free market access that we've agreed under the TDCA, they are also giving to the European Union. We agreed that the agreement can enter into force between, say, Swaziland and the European Union for South Africa, for example, or all the SACU countries have ratified the agreement. But what we say is, if that happens, so say the agreement enters into force between only one SACU country and the European Union, it can only be for market access agreed under the TDCA because we wanted to keep in place the common external tariff. So that is what that provision means, is that the new market access for fisheries and the new market access provided for agricultural products will only enter into force once all of SACU has ratified the agreement. So, and aim is, as I said, for the agreement for all of our group and the European Union to enter into force on the 1st of October 2016. Namibia has already ratified the agreement. We, the other countries are all in the process, and our indication is that they would be finished with the processes in time for all of us to notify our instance of ratification, and therefore the agreement of all of us and the EU to enter into force on one date, being the 1st of October, hopefully. And that will mean that the new market access will also enter into force on that date. But there is a second condition to this market access, the new market access. For the new agricultural market access, not fisheries, the new agricultural market access to enter into force, South Africa must notify the European Union that we are protecting the APIs. And the European Union must notify South Africa that they are protecting our GIs. And once, say, South Africa notifies the European Union to be protecting the APIs, the new market access that the European Union is bringing to South Africa on agricultural products will enter into force on the first of the following months after receiving notification. South Africa will give our notification because it's a separate process from the agreement, will give our notification in time for the new market access and agriculture also to enter into force on the 1st of October. The European Union, I understand, will only be able to give the notification once the agreement has officially provisionally entered in force. So the new market access that we are providing to the European Union will then probably only enter into force on the 1st of November. So as I said, very complicated, but this is the reason for these different dates for implementation. But the aim is that all of this will be combined for one date to minimize any confusion that, that may exist.
To me, it is a matter of concern that we're going into this, and as usual, South Africa goes in transparently and openly, and too often in the past have we burnt our fingers in that manner, because other countries and members of the trading bloc have not kept their word. Because once we deposit, can't withdraw. Do you see that? Look what happened to us, the WTO. Eager to join, thinking others will be as transparent and committed as already indicated. So that's why I asked about the depositing. Are we going to jump in with 2 feet and then try and call for a life belt? Because we won't get a life belt. That's what we won't get. So I just want to get, there's still something at the back of my mind. Yes, Honourable Mkhonke.
No, thank you very much, President. There's also something at the back of my mind about something else. You know, when you were presenting, you said all these, some of these agreements were determined early 2007. And then I went quickly into my research. I would like you to agree or perhaps to dispute this. There's a guy by the name Peter Treba, which I used on 14th June. 2007, in his paper, A Critique of European Union's Negotiation Standards, Playing Hub to CCCP Regional Spokes. That says, playing hubs into Africa spokes. This guy says, commodities continue to account for the bulk of export earnings in most sub-Saharan countries. Subcontinent is by and large incorporated into the global market as an exporter of commodities based essentially on preferential access to developed country markets, primarily to the European Union via CDA, and importer of manufactured and services to Africa. Now, he's arguing, this guy, that space is not open even today by the land of the EU. And even in the table of the points for discussion, this matter is not getting prominence. Do you think that in this agreement we can dispute that this fact is not really the fact? But it goes further to say this reflects both colonial histories and comparative disadvantages in between CPA, I mean between SACO countries and European Union. You presented a very bright and nice thing. Do you think this is what we want South Africa to go to?
Honourable MacPherson?
Thanks, Chair. I just want to get some further clarity on the services negotiations or lack thereof. I'm not sure that it should be one or the other. I'm just trying to understand why we wouldn't be negotiating services agreements on a continental basis and with Europe. And are we doing it because it's a lack of capacity to negotiate to agreements on services, or is there more of a more specific reason that we're embarking on a continental agreement first?
Thank you, Honourable MacPherson. Over to yourself, Ms. Kruger.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe if I can just address the issue that you raised first. We are in close contact with our colleagues in the European Union. We will be having a meeting at the SADC Ecos Group and the European Union in early September to talk about the implementation of the agreement. so that we can look at where everyone is in terms of the ratification process, when they would be able to ratify, what the process is in the European Union, so that we can make sure that everyone is on board and everyone will be able to implement the agreement. At we want to see if we can't have one date for the implementation of the agreement. So we will, of course, also then, once we are ready for our, to deposit our instrument, we will first have this discussion so that we can make sure about the dates and that we can, as far as possible, have a consolidated approach and a consolidated entering into force of this agreement between the SADC, EPA group, and the European Union. So I hope that will take care of some of the concerns raised, valid concerns. In terms of the issue that you raised on the our efforts to the European Union, I think I've indicated in my presentation that a number of our top exports is still commodities. And this is not only an issue for South Africa, that's an issue for the AVP. Many countries in Africa and also the Caribbean and the Pacific export a few basic commodities to the European Union. That is their biggest export. South Africa has got a more diverse basket of exports to the European Union, and as I've indicated, we're already moving to more value-added products. Our top exports actually now in the European Union is motor vehicles. That is really sophisticated, if you want to say, and a lot of value addition is even in South Africa in terms of the manufacture of these motor vehicles. That is where we want to move to. We hope that the economic partnership agreement will enable us to increase that value-added product, but it is still a huge problem. It's a problem that we're also raising with the European Union, that not only in South Africa, but as Africa as a whole, we want to address that. We want to increase the value-added product that we export, and we want to move away from being dependent on the export of primary products. So also as the EU, these issues are raised with the European Union, so that as Africa as a bloc, we can also raise this and address this issue with the European Union. As you know, we want to industrialize in Africa. That's the common aim of Africa. Then in terms of the issue on services, one of the issues is capacity. To services negotiations is very complex. It's not the same as to negotiate goods. Every sector has got its own issues, its own things that we have to consider, whether you're negotiating in transport or when you're negotiating telecoms. So it is complex. It takes a lot of time. And at the moment, we are focusing on Africa. And once that is in place, we will look at negotiating this agreement also further. We also just have to remind you, we're also negotiating services in the WTO. The negotiations, is, you know, hasn't it's been going for a number of years, but services is part of the Doha agenda, and we are also negotiating services as a whole at the level of the WTO.
Now, I'd like us to take a formal position on this. Ethers have been here some time, and perhaps you could correct me, Ms. Brugger, but as far as I'm aware, it's been there for at least 12 years, you know, backwards and forwards and so on. And, well, they're finally here, and certainly one of the positives is that it improves on the TDCA arrangements, and that needs to be considered very seriously. I also want to remind members that they do have the large, I understand it's in a file form, all the articles. You were given this, and has everyone got them by now? It was distributed, and I was given every assurance that we all have it. Okay? We also have something which was done probably by the researcher, I think, with yourself.
a colleague in research, a little summary in the on these issues. So I hope you open that. But having said that, and just one name, I'm trying to see who's here today. Emily, a journalist, is Bulalani, Philip, Messino De Luca, right, and that's about all I've got here. Is that Akona Baninzi? So there appears to be one or two who aren't actually, yes, they have repeatedly asked for that to be taken account of. I said Messino De Luca. Yeah, but it's not the gentleman here on my list. Now, may I suggest if I can see him, you should be able to. Please get that. Right. We will now proceed to the formal part of this program, and that is the ethos themselves. And I wish to put it to you that having studied the articles, having had this briefing and reviewed information you have been compiling since you became a member of the committee, the report of the Portfolio Committee on Trade and Industry on the Economic Partnership Agreement, EPA, between the South African Development Community, SADC, SADC, and EPA states of the One Pot, and the European Union and its member states of the other part, dated 24th August 2016. The Portfolio Committee on Trade and Industry, having considered the request for approval by Parliament of the Economic Partnership Agreement between the South African Development Community, SADC, EPA states of the One Pot, and the European Union and its member states of the other part, recommend that the House, in terms of section 2312 of the Constitution, approve the said agreement. And I'm sure many of you looked that up there. So can we please have someone to move for the adoption, for the recommendation to the House for adoption? Colonel, can you put that on record?
I formally move that we adopt.
The agreement. Honourable MacPherson.
Chairperson, I second the recommendation of the Honourable Colonel to send the agreement to the House.
Any objections? Very formal process, members. No. On that particular note then, Mr. Hermans, we would appreciate it if you would expedite the processing to the House. Now, I hope you fully understand that is going to the House, not talking of the depositing. The depositing is another step which you learn there's going to be a meeting. When did you say it was? Yeah, there's going to be a meeting around there so that we clarify and make sure there are no obstacles in the way and move ahead. Thank you very much for your time and commitment to this process. Thank you, Ms. Kruger. Thank you, Ms. Impashvili. Now, as you can see here, I appreciate that Honourable Gwanoff are remaining behind because you're sitting in an ad hoc, aren't you? And, yes?
I'm reading something. He's saying that the Deputy Minister of Trade and Industry has won a glory.
In a minute, you may come with that. I'm still in the middle of this process. And while I'd be the first to start congratulating along with you, I just want to finish the formal part. I thought that it was the British Consul General, Mr. Edward Roman. And I was looking for your name here, and it wasn't here. So, thank you very much for being here. And I mentioned that in particular to members. Some of you have raised the whole idea of the impact of Brexit, haven't you? And I'm sure for you that was informative, Consul General. Thank you very much. All right, now that means this formal process of that protocol. We still have another item, but let me take your hand, Honourable Mpongi.
No, Trevor, I'm reading something on the policy here. That is saying that the Deputy Minister of Trade and Industry, Mr. Nzandile Masina, has been sworn in as the Mayor of Ekurhuleni. I'm new in the Parliament. I don't know what you do normally when your minister is sent somewhere. You know, whether we sent a congratulatory note or what. Thank you.
I'm glad to hear you phrase that in the way of an inquiry, because in the first instance, it's pertinent to this committee. Why? He was the deputy minister in the portfolio. So obviously it has a direct impact on us. No doubt the President will be informing us what the situation will be. We do. I'm still in the middle of a sentence, but I notice all those half... Just a minute. Now, what I am saying, right now I'm available to do my job properly, is that, you know, it does affect us, and I've no doubt once that decision has been taken by the President, due process will follow here. However, as he was a member here and graced this committee from time to time, we may, as a committee, note what has occurred, and individually you may take your matter further and send congratulatory messages per se. Thank you, Honourable MacPherson.
May he work as hard for them as he did for us. But can we make a nomination from the committee for a deputy minister to the president? Is that permissible in terms of the rules?
I know you're very eager. Very eager. And, that should be noted, the eagerness of the younger members of the committee. No, let us get back. Now, members, look, it's not quite me. You know, we all know, and it's a good joke, and it does, as it were, put the brakes on how we analyse the local government elections. But be that as it may, allow me to move a little bit further on, and that is correspondence and invitations. I would like to remind members, we can make proposals to the chair of chairs, to the speaker's office, essentially. And in the final analysis, we have to comply with the formula when it concerns overseas study groups or, what is it, seminars, conferences, and the like. Secondly, the budget of Parliament was cut, as you all well know. And by now you should have heard me say repeatedly, the budget is constrained for the committee. So we will address it in the light of that. I look at the most immediate issue on the table, and that concerns NEPAD, which was here. And from NEPAD, we received an invitation inviting us, all members in fact, you know, the chair and others, to the NEPAD meeting, at which, of course, because it happens from time to time, the minister will in fact be making his presentation to NEPAD on the matter. It happens to be, I know from our recollection, which it was on the desk Monday, and that is Monday the 5th of September, 10 to 1630, Emperor's Palace. And as I said the other day, those of you who haven't been, hazarded the inside of a casino, It has gambling legislation as part of our portfolio. You may even take a turn into the not to go and gamble, obviously, but simply to get out the environment. Okay. So, and that is why I'm also saying, right, this is of interest in first palace. Casino, you could kill a couple of birds with one stone there. But we come back to the budget. The budget. Now, our committee budget is heavily constrained. So I suggest and propose those in Harping, and there are quite a few of us, take the opportunity to attend. Those who have these extra tickets, which they didn't use up for local government elections, may well take a turn up there. So I will certainly make a copy of this for all members. However, I need to know by this afternoon, at the latest tomorrow morning, is that clear? I want to know names, have the names read. We don't need to take decisions now, anyone, everyone. Yes, Honourable Mkhombi?
No, just want to ask Larry, at what time is that starting and when is it ending? Because I'm afraid that if it's on Monday, on the 6th, are we not supposed to be in a committee meeting?
We are supposed to be here on Tuesday, aren't we, the 6th? Yes, but the point that Honourable Mkhongi is making is it's finished at midnight. We have a problem, perhaps. It is 10 o'clock to 4:30. Living in Gauteng myself, I know there's a 9 o'clock, what do you call that? That's 2200 hours. 21 there. All right. So there are several flights, and it's close to the airport. So there we are. I need your names through to Mr. Herman's, preferably this afternoon or tomorrow morning. Then we have another invitation, and that is the 34th Havana International Trade Fair. And a number of you may have recently taken a turn to Cuba. If those who haven't, of course, it's a country that is on our international radar as the smallest country to have come on to its independence after revolution. But be that as it may, let me see what it says. It comes from Dr. Rob Daly, the Minister of Trade and Industry, informing us that the DTI will be participating there. And Latin America, there's some massive international trade fair that's been held there. 4,500 national and foreign exhibitors from over 60 countries and expects to receive 150,000 visitors. South African companies will be showcasing their products not only to Cuba, not only, you see, because there's several countries, but also actively consolidating and expanding its bilateral economic relationship with Cuba and Chesa, okay, both of them, the larger region, as it were. And in the past 8 years, it supported these companies for the these international exhibits. Now, as some of you may recall, but others, perhaps the Honourable Hill Lewis will, I'm sure, South Africa did provide a loan to Cuba. You remember a few years back, I think you were in the committee at that time, and the grant of seeds, etc., agricultural product, as I recall. So the DTI invites the portfolio committee to accompany the DTI delegation, but will be expecting Parliament to fund the parliamentarians, you know, accommodation costs, etc. Now, and there we are, as it were. Now, as I said, I'm not going to repeat what I spoke about, formulas, etc. Mr. Lemons can spell that out very briefly, but I think it's a matter of if two members of the ANC get that, or three, now three go, the first one comes from the largest opposition party. The date is November. Sorry about that. Hang on, is it October? No, 31st October to the 4th November. And obviously it would be a couple of days before. What is the 4th of October? I mean, 31st of October. We just check. But be that as it may, if three go, then the a member from the largest party, opposition party, will accompany, will be in the delegation. If five go, is that all four? Then it goes to the next party in that order. I'm not going to spell it out. So it's Monday to Friday, and clearly you would be flying out on a Saturday or Sunday. Is that clear? Saturday. I'm putting that to you because it's to the committee. So I'm making that proposal. I need an agreement as to who goes from the opposition. They invariably identify one among themselves and provide the chairperson with a name. I think you know that, Honourable Will Lewis. So I'm going to give you till tomorrow afternoon to let me have a name. Is that in order? Honourable, yesterday, and there was a time when I took the entire committee anyway, 15 people or 13. The days of that level of expenditure are history. However, there are occasions when we do have the opportunity to include someone from a smaller delegation in Parliament because one of the parties steps out of it, as it were, and then that goes down to a smaller party, and that has happened before in Parliament recently. So I just let you know that, and I hope that doesn't dilute your commitment to the committee, because we do need your input here. Thank you. So, right. I put that to a committee. I'd like it to be proposed that we don't need one of these heavy-duty resolutions. We'll pass that later. Is there anyone who has a problem with this? No. Thank you very much. That's Savannah. The next thing is Chair of Chairs. What we'd like to know when we are dealing with the gambling legislation and the related information, you know, different things, and that, you know, is huge. So we will look at the program yet again, engage with the department and the minister, and come back to you with a formal response on next week. Is that in order? Honourable Hildreth?
How can we give a response to the Chair of Chairs when we don't have a bill yet? There's no legislation.
That's not what I said. You know, we always plan ahead before we get them on the table. The department, the minister, generally informs us that we can expect a bill in the second term, in the third term. You follow? That's what I mean. Are we happy with that, Honourable Hildreth? So I would appreciate it if you would have the legislation and the expected tailings sent to me. Thanks, Ms. Nardu. Right. We've dealt with all of that. And looking at the program for next week, you're looking at Tuesday, the 6th. It is starting back again at 9 o'clock. Oh, I'm reminded by someone who's presenting a paper here, so naturally it's of also personal interest to him, Mr. Medima, the International Astronautical Congress. The 26th to 30th of September. So, again, it's the same formula. The chair, we don't have a whip, you see, this is the issue at the moment, as you know, member of Manco and someone else. We will put this to you for a third person. I know, and I have been informed already, that only three people maximum will be considered. Not going, will be considered. So that's where it is. All right? So I'd also like that addressed, Honourable Bill Lewis. The 26th or the 30th, that invariably means the 25th at the latest. Right. Thank you, Mr. Medema. Right. And then we move to the 6th. And now you know why the Honourable Mkhonkie raised the issue as he did. Because we're back here, and I would not like anyone to miss the Auditor General. Please be here. Now, if you're going to be having a flight problem, talk to your Chief Whip. Honourable MacPherson?
Chair, I've been saying it for 2 years, and I'll say it for another 3 years. It is impossible to get into Parliament at 9 o'clock on a Tuesday morning. And I have consulted with colleagues that sit in other committees, and other committees have been gracious by the chairperson's leniency to start at 9:30. And I would be very appreciative if you too could show such graciousness towards me, as your other fellow chairs do, so that I'm not prejudiced from having to miss my constituency day in Durban, and I'm able to attend public meetings, etc., that are invariably scheduled for a Monday night.
Appreciate the explanation, but I'm not known for my graciousness. That's why I am insisting about this. We must also understand the Auditor General has schedules and programs. And this committee has had to postpone too many meetings of the Auditor General, and that is not a good thing at all. So I'm sure your colleague will hold the fort while you arrive. Obviously, there are issues like minutes, etc., that come up. And one may take, one may be aware of it and see, you know, how things are done here, because, but I doubt that the Auditor General's timing can be moved. It was quite difficult to get that. So the Auditor General is the priority as far as this committee is concerned. You know, all right. But thank you for the reminder. And what you may consider doing is lobbying, approaching in writing the SAA, the BA, various other airlines to request that they consider a later flight or an earlier flight on Tuesday morning like mine. Thank you very much. Isn't that how business works? Right. Now, we've dealt with those programs. We will see you here. I would like to remind staff that I want all the documents. Ensure that the members have all of the documents for the AD. All of the documents. That's a very important meeting. And there are a number of issues that we said we would raise. I'd appreciate it if... who works on the budget and the Auditor General, yourself, Ms. Madalani, if you would highlight those issues raised during the course of the financial year so that we have a list that we can track down. Right. On that particular note, with the revised program, which allowed us to finish before 11, which gives you a lot of space, I'd like to thank you for your commitment to the meeting. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned. Talk to you soon.